Blog Talk Radio.
Fight, Growth, and Wellness.
Right here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. And I'm Sandy, and I'll be your guest speaker and your hostess for this evening. You know, I get so excited every Tuesday to present this show. I'm like a little kid, and I just have some of the best presents in the form of guests on this show. So just stay tuned, and I thank you for being a part of Life, Love, and Wellness. And again, we have an absolutely outstanding guest for you tonight, and we got a wonderful subject on tap for you. And so let's just get things rolling, as we do every week right here. And so we're giving thanks to our ancestors for being with us all the time, every moment, every second of every day, and especially on Tuesday evenings, as we discuss issues that are not ordinarily talked about in an open setting. So we know that we stand on the shoulders of our ancestors for strength. We trust our ancestors have our backs as we move forward. And so, ancestors, we love you now and we love you forever. Ashe, ashe. So we anchor ourselves in positive energy and affirmative rating as well. And sometimes this is referred to as a prayer. I do a daily inspirational post online. It's called revsandy.wordpress.com. And you can go on there and read the inspirational thoughts in full of the blog for tonight's opening, and it's called See Your Goals. Visualize your goals. See it very clearly. Is every detail in the picture? Can you make it clearer still? Feel your goal. How does it feel? Can you see yourself accomplishing your goals? Again, that's at revsandy.wordpress.com, and they're a full daily inspirational message that can get you pumped up and started in a positive energy. So please visit my blog spot and sign up to have it delivered to your in-basket via email every day. So it's all about life. It's all about love. And it's all about wellness. Our show today is called A True Champion for Vision Loss. And I have the most amazing guest, Amy Bovard. And she's going to be talking to us about her journey from being a sighted individual, is what the acceptable terminology is. But basically, it's going from being able to see to not being able to see. And she's going to tell us about what that looked like for her. And I was looking for a different word to put in there instead of look. But what that felt like to her and how it impacted her and her life and her goals and things like that. Thus, the reading of being able to feel your goals and to see your goals. And so Amy will be with us in just a moment. And audience, you know you're invited to join in the discussion always. So comments are always welcomed and every voice will be heard. However, no foul, profane, or vulgar language is allowed. So if you choose to use such language, you will be disconnected from the show. So our call-in number here is 516-531-9819. You would press 1 on your dial, which will alert me that you want to speak live on air with us. And so since all of our shows are archived where you can always go back and listen to any of the shows, we really would like to ensure the best quality. So if I open up your line for you to speak, just know that I normally won't turn you off or, you know, take you out of the queue. And so just be mindful of any background noises. The microphones are very sensitive. And so, again, you're welcome to be a part of the live discussion at 516-531-9819. And for those of you that are interested in going back and listening to any of the archives, they can be found at blogtalkradio.com/Sandy Rogers, R-O-D-G-E-R-S. We're going to take a quick music break. And then I'm going to come back with the amazing Amy and bring her online so that you get to know her like I do. And here's our music. We'll be right back.
Myself back up. I hold my head up high. I was not built to. built a bridge. No, no, I got to know my own strength.
That was the incomparable Whitney Houston singing, I Didn't Know My Own Strength. And that right there, you guys, is going to lead us into tonight's guest. Welcome back to Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. Our guest tonight, Amy, is going to talk to us about being, living the life of a true champion for vision loss. So Amy's going to explain and tell us, describe and share with us her story. And again, audience, you're welcome to be a part of this discussion by asking questions, by giving Amy a pat on the back or a boost up or whatever you feel you would like to do. The call-in number here is 516-531-9819. And just press 1 to let us know you want to speak live on air. So, again, it is my honor, privilege, and privilege to introduce to you Miss Amy. And I would like for her to come on to share with you who she is. And you'll understand, just like Whitney was singing in the song, she was not built to break. And so as she tells us her story, you'll see what I mean by that. And so, Amy, thank you for taking time from out of your very busy schedule to join us here on Life, Love, and Wellness, the Sandy Rogers Show. I certainly appreciate you being a guest of ours.
Oh, I am thrilled to be here. It's that song is wonderful. It just so epitomizes what I feel about myself right now. And it's just perfect for this talk. So I really, really love that song. My story starts with just, I was a traveler. I was a teacher overseas, teaching in primary school. And I had just received a job on the other side of the world, in the Far East, in Indonesia. And I was moving from elementary school kids to college students. So I went home and I said, I gotta get new glasses because I'm kind of having trouble seeing at night. So I had to leave for Indonesia in about 2 weeks. And so I thought, okay, I'll just pick up these glasses and go. Pack and I'm off. And I had been living overseas for 3 years. So I was kind of on the queue. My life wasn't in the States. And I was living my dream of being overseas. I had been in South America and Central America. And I was learning about culture. I was traveling. I was writing about my experiences. It was just a marvelous time in my life. And then when I went to the doctors, I told them that I felt like, gosh, I feel like I'm like night-blind or something. I was making a joke. But he sent me for further testing, and within a couple of days, they gave me the diagnosis, and I guess I still, my mind was thinking, okay, I got to pack, I got to do this, I got to do that, and I wasn't prepared for when they told me that I had an incurable hereditary disease that would result in blindness. So the first thing I remember saying is, do you have the right file? You know, I just couldn't imagine that it would be me. And so I didn't know what to do with this information. It was kind of melodramatic, and I felt like it was like a soap opera or something. And, my mother didn't want me to go overseas. I didn't know what to do. I just went to my room for, like, almost the entire 2 weeks, and I prayed, and I told everybody, like, what are they supposed to say? I'm losing my vision. Oh, you know, like, put, like, people in these situations, you know. But in the end, it was really a verse in the Bible where Abraham, at that time he was Abram, and he was told to go to a place that God would show him. and God would make him a father of many nations. And I thought, well, gosh, if he's going to send him to a place he doesn't even know, then, of course, if I go to a place I don't know, God is going to take care of me, too. And that scripture enabled me to move forward. And,
wow.
And do that. So it was really that decision. And, you know, it was just a lot because when I first got to Indonesia, it had been after 2 days of flying. I went to my new job, and she was the director was just going to introduce me to people. And with this diagnosis of retinitis pigmentosa, you don't know when it's going to happen. The doctor said everyone's different, so it could be soon, it could be down the line. We just didn't know. So I didn't know what to
expect. What does that mean, Amy, that your blindness would just come on?
Yeah, I didn't know if it would mean like all of a sudden I'd be suddenly blind, or if it would be a gradual thing, or if it, you know, had no idea. So when I got to my new job, there's all these steps to climb up, and I was tired. And I got to the top step, and I missed it or something happened, and I fell down 18 steps.
Oh.
And it was my first day, and I was like, oh, my gosh, my bruised. My whole body is bruised. Am I losing my vision right now? Is this really happening? I was so terrified that I was just going to – but it wasn't. But that's the fear you have. Like when you're first diagnosed, you don't know what to expect. So, and I hadn't told anyone because I was afraid they would not let me go. Like my director would say, "Oh well, we can't have a speech here." So I kept it a secret, and I actually kept it a secret for like 20 years.
20 years.
I think after a while, I was losing my vision, but it was gradual. So I began to, trick myself. I said, oh, you're so clumsy. You're just clumsy. You're not losing your vision, you know. And so I kept adapting. And so I didn't need to tell anyone because I could adapt and I could, you know, I don't care if people think I didn't care if people thought I was clumsy or did this or did that, as long as I could keep my job or jobs.
Wow.
So it's really amazing what your mind does. And I guess in a way that's good because it allowed me to continue living my dreams out. And in a way it was bad because I never really dealt with it. And then
Was there anything that you could have done to change it though? No? Yes?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
And so I believe it was the best decision for me. And I got to know several different cultures. I went to Japan. I went to Egypt. I lived in the United Arab Emirates and Taiwan. So I really got to experience a lot of different cultures and teaching situations. And I just felt strong and excited about my career. I taught English as a second language.
Wow.
And my vision wasn't stopping me, you know. So I remember tripping over, these things happened. Like I was teaching in Taiwan, I had these steps that were very wide but not very high. So I had to teach on this, what do you call it, like a stadium or something. And I used to walk around when I teach. And I was, like, I remember tripping a couple times and my students saying, "Oh, you're saying, are you okay?" Yes, I'm fine. And I never told them I couldn't see, you know. But
wow.
So I did keep compensating, but the problems were becoming more and more serious as I lost more and more vision. So at a certain point, I started thinking I'd better do something about this. In my last job, I was the head of one of the English departments. I was giving an exam to all of the freshmen, like a listening exam or something. I was ahead of that, and we have to stay right in the room with the students. If they, like, for example, if they go to the restroom, somebody has to accompany them out because of the standards. So, I went to take this student to the restroom. And I ran into a cement column,
Wow.
And I just didn't see it. Because what happens is your vision narrows from the regular the regular vision to like a tunnel. So all of these things on the top and the bottom and the sides are cut off. And so you only see, but you think you see everything because your brain compensates. And it seems like there's something there, so you don't know what you're missing. And then all of a sudden you hit something, and so you find oh, that's what I didn't see. and
wow.
It gets harder and harder to hide it. So it's like I had to get stitches that day, and someone else had to take over for me. Things like that happened towards the end of my teaching.
Okay, so let me
overseas.
So let me ask you a question. So you were overseas, away from your family, 20 years in various countries teaching, and you were constantly losing your vision losing your vision for 20 years.
Yes.
That's amazing. I just wanted to make sure I was hearing you right. Go right ahead.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah. Well, people would think I was ditzy or because it's one time I ran into a teacher in the hallway, and she had coffee, and I had sorry, you know. But they just told me later that after I revealed the truth that, oh, we just thought you were, like, ditzy. That's all they knew of me. I'm very enthusiastic, so I think they just thought, oh, she's got a lot on her mind, and, you know. But
you had no fear.
Not much. Sometimes, because at night, I'm completely, like, blind. Like, I can't see unless there's really, really, really strong light. And so sometimes, like, I tried not to be afraid, but sometimes I didn't go on some outings that I would have gone on otherwise. Like, I remember there was one I wanted to go to Oman, and there was, like, these dolphins. I wanted to go and camp out and see the dolphins, and I just didn't do it. So I missed out on a few, but not very many. My gosh.
It's so much faith that you lived your life in, being away from your family and those that, you know, would normally watch over you and protect you and take care of you, be in Indonesia and Taiwan and Ethiopia and those kind of places. How old were you at this time?
Well, when I was diagnosed, I was 28. So I traveled and lived overseas until I was about 48. I might have been, it was 2006. So I guess it was about 22 years in all. So about 20 years that I was gone. And 22 total, but after I was diagnosed. So in 2006, my father was diagnosed with cancer, stage 4 lung cancer. And then I came home just to be with them, my family. But when he passed away, it was very quick. It was a couple months, 2 months from when he was diagnosed. So then I left my job to stay home and help my mother. And that's when I really noticed huge change in my vision. The next couple of years, I noticed that, wow, I'm tripping over everything. I'm running into walls. I'm falling downstairs. And it was just kind of shocking. Like, before I could always handle it, but then when I was in my own hometown, which is small, and people know me, then I was having all these accident-prone things. So that's when I started to notice also hearing loss. I started to notice that it was really hard to hear people over the telephone. And I kind of reached this point, I had to figure out what to do about it. A couple of different things happened. And I found myself in uncomfortable situations, and I wasn't making it as a writer. I wasn't as strict as I should be with myself.
Okay.
Really, really diligent. And so I said, I got to get a teaching job. So God enabled me. He opened a job, two jobs in my hometown, which is really unusual because I live in a small place, and we don't, you know, my field is teaching English as a second language, so there's not a lot of opportunity there. And I got two jobs teaching. One was teaching Spanish, and the other one was teaching Asian studies at a college. You know, I figured, well, my jobs are going to go down the drain. So I kind of reached a crossroads that year. And something happened with a high school reunion, and that it was at night and dark, and I thought that I was fooling everyone, that nobody would know about my vision loss. But actually, I was the only one who didn't know that everybody knew knew something.
Wow.
We just watched. Yeah. So it was just, and then I realized, I have to be courageous. I have to do something about this. I can't just keep on going, and there's no more ways to adapt. I have to get something else. And that's when I was pointed in the direction of the Bureau of Blindness and Visual Services. And I met a counselor.
This is like 20, how many years in is this? 23, 24?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
And yes. So it's really scary to be that, because then you think, I can't teach, I can't do this, I can't, what can I do? Oh, how will I ever meet anybody? All of these fears come to the surface. Like all the fears that I had when I was first diagnosed, they came back stronger. And now I was really having to face it. And all the other was just practice. You know, And so it just seemed like God kept placing the right people in my life to force me to see my situation as it really was, and to become bolder and more confident. And it was really scary because I had been in denial for so many years that I still wanted to keep it a secret, but it just kept coming out in different ways in my jobs.
Yeah.
And what happened was the real big change, there was a lot of little steps that led to that, to the change in my thinking, but my mobility instructor, the thing that I was most frightened of, using a white cane, it is the thing that gave me the biggest independence. And I believe it was because my mobility instructor was completely blind, and he didn't pull any punches. He said, "Why don't you just tell people you're blind?" And I started out with a smokescreen, but I'm not blind, I'm just clumsy. And he wouldn't let me hold on to that. He just kept taking away the layers of my deception, of my denial, and he would point to the truth.
Right.
And just because it was so frank. And every time, in the beginning I didn't like him because I felt he was exposing me in my job. And he'd say, "Oh, I'm helping Annie with her cane." I'm like, "Oh, shh, quiet, nobody knows that," you know. But he modeled independence. He modeled strength. He modeled confidence. And I started to do these things. Like in my training, I had to wear a sleep shade, like when you go on the airplane and you sleep, you have these black things to cover your eyes. I had to do that so that I couldn't see, and that I had to rely on my non-visual techniques that he was teaching me. So every time I went on another mobility training, I started to get more excited. the adrenaline would come, but it would be like, I can do this. And I didn't know if I could do it by myself if my mobility instructor wasn't there, but I started to feel more and more confident. And there were, I think it started coming out in the way that I was responding to people, that I was becoming, regaining my confidence. Yeah. So, but now you said I'm like that champion for vision loss. I am, because I struggled so much and so long that I thought, I know that there are other people who are struggling with picking up a white cane, because it identifies you as blind to society.
Yeah.
And you have to get over your preconceptions of what blindness is, you know. And it's very frightening to own that word, to realize that there's not a negative or a positive connotation, that it's simply a word, and that you are the one that decides that decides your fate. You are the one that makes your life full. You are the one that rules your own life. And I started to believe that little by little by little, and I felt so empowered that as I began to write my memoir and I began to share my story with others, write me and ask me how I came to that point and what did I do next. And I found myself encouraging them and wanting to write more books to encourage them, because I knew exactly how they felt. And it's such a scary place to be. So
right.
That's what I really try to encourage others and continue to write and to do that. Yeah.
So I have a couple of family members, and one is deceased at this point, but I remember being somewhere with him out of town, and we were going a different route from one place to another, walking, but still it was a different route than what we have been taking. And he said, "Where are you going?" You know, and I said, "Well, we're going over to Thelma's house." And he's like, "But this is not the right way." I'm like, "Well, we'll still get there going this way." And so it made him very uncomfortable. And so he had to be honest with me. And he said, "Well, I hadn't told you, but I'm losing my vision. And I know how to get to Thelma's house going the other way, because I've been counting the number of steps that I take before I get to," And I was like, wow, that's really creative, you know. And so I kind of get that. And when my dad, when he first started having problems, because I was working for the Center for the Visually Impaired here in Atlanta, and I also was driving the president of the, Federation for the Blind, I believe that's what it's called. So I was driving him, and I was explaining to him. So he helped me to get a cane and all of like that. But my dad was like, "I am not using a white cane." And I'm like, "Why?" "Because I don't want people to know I'm blind." And so just like you're saying, you know, that becomes a real stigma, and people don't want to be associated with it, although it's the best thing for them to have, so that people will be more lenient and more courteous with them as they're maneuvering about, you know, trying to go places, instead of them, you know, reaching out and trying to feel everything around them.
Yeah. You know, people feel sometimes it's a melodramatic moment when you say, "Oh, you need to have a white cane." It's like kind of like a soap opera, you know. Is it really, they say, is it really that bad? And it's not good or bad. It's just that we feel that, or many vision impaired people feel that if they have to use a white cane, then all of a sudden everything has deteriorated, and their whole life is going to change. So it is a very frightening move, and there is fears attached to it. And always it strikes me with my journey that the more I talk about it, the more sighted people understand these fears. That because, like, a lot of times people think, "Oh, I want to help." For example, with the Lions Club, I want to help make put together the barbecue lunch, and I thought I couldn't do anything. And they were putting me on like an easy job, but they think the thought process is, because she can't see, she can't she can't do a task properly. So let's just put her with the easy thing. But so it's
right.
kind of up to us to change society's idea and say, I can do this, I can do that, I can't do that. It's like the whole thing of truthfulness, say like communication, what I can do, what I can't do, what I need help with, what I don't need help with, And
mm-hmm.
It's really hard to get to that place where you're comfortable enough to tell that to people. And the other thing is, and I thought this myself, that if you have a white cane, then you're completely blind, right? And that means that you have no sight. That's what the belief is with a lot of people, and that's completely erroneous because there are so many, as you said with your friend who says, I didn't want to say anything, but I'm losing my vision. A lot of people have vision loss from, being legally blind to completely blind, and there are no telltale signs, so you don't know it. You don't know what's happening. So a lot of people are living with secret fears, and it's like that, they don't have any way, they don't want to open up and tell you that because there's a fear associated with it, and they think
right.
there's something bad.
Because they feel like they're like an incomplete person because they don't have their sight. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I think that's
okay.
what I got kind of, and it's completely false sense of fear, but it's so real. And, and then sometimes when people respond, they don't know what to do because they're kind of afraid of saying or doing the wrong. And then I learned from my mobility instructor that it's up to me to put people at ease. And once they're at ease, so that's why I learned to be more open about it because I want them to understand
okay.
that we have the same fears, we have the same dreams, we have the same ideas and hopes. We just do things differently. We achieve them differently.
Working with the youth has been extremely rewarding for me. I've been providing transportation for a number of years, although I took off maybe 4 or 5 years in between that to help with my granddaughter who was attending high school at the time. But I know prior, when I first started, you're right, and so I learned the children because the children don't seem to be as negatively impacted by their blindness, at least most of them, let me say it that way, most of them are not as negatively impacted as the older folks because when I would take the children to the center, I would just stay there, and so they
mm-hmm.
have from the babies to the senior citizens at the facility, and so I would always talk with people and things like that. But like with the children, they would do different games. Like I remember one time
mm-hmm.
I had picked up some children, were taking them into the center, and one of the children said, Miss Sandy, I think you went the wrong way. I'm like, how do you know what way I'm going? He said, because I count the bumps in the road, and you didn't hit all the bumps this time. Are you going the right way? so it was just little stuff like that, and I would be so tickled by them, because you would think they weren't paying attention and they were doing, some other things, and they had their own games, and they loved to read and share their knowledge. And so I was always so impressed with the children, and what they were doing.
Right. Yeah, especially if they have learned to use a cane at a young age, then it's a little bit easier to accept it because that's what they know. And what's difficult is when inclusion to be when you're in a school and you're the only vision impaired person, so it's more difficult. And so sometimes I go and speak to schools to tell other children about vision loss, and that's when remember the song that I wrote, that my friends and I wrote, My Cane Will Help, Will See Me Through? So we sing that song so that they learn. I mean, sometimes when I talk to people, there's no vision of hear people in the classroom, but I want them to know what, if they meet somebody, not to be afraid, but to include them, you know. So we sing
okay,
these things
okay.
so that they become more open and aware of them. Sometimes they're just, they pick up fears from other people, and you know, if you're different, and you're different, and, you know, you get teased and stuff. So I want them to be inclusive. So I go and I talk sometimes about guide dogs, sometimes about a cane, and just to open up a dialogue.
So do you think the fears and the level of being frightened by this diagnosis of vision loss, do you think it's more prevalent with the younger people? Are they less adaptable, or do you think older people are more impacted by the loss of their vision?
I really think it depends on the person, but a lot more
okay.
older people do keep it
uh-huh.
a secret, and it comes out in other ways. And where children just seem to, if they're not coping well, they just stay by themselves, and so
okay.
they handle it differently, and but I guess it really depends on the person, their personality, and the desire to integrate and help in doing that and learning the right to go about it, which
okay.
I think it's really good when they, as you said, when you went to the center and you saw the children playing together. I think that's really positive.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, because perhaps they don't have the words to describe what they're feeling and what they're going through. And so it would just depend, like you say, you know, on the individual, be it a young person or an older person.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've known people that as they were slowly losing their vision, perhaps is the right terminology, but you know, they gave up driving cars because they have run into one too many items. You know what I'm saying? Like another
yeah.
car
mm-hmm.
or, you know, parking lot posts and all that kind of stuff. And so, but they never told anybody that they were having trouble seeing anything, you know, out
mm-hmm.
of their peripheral
yeah.
or whatever. And so
mm-hmm.
it's just, you know, as I get older, and, of course, you know, then my relatives, as they're getting older as well, it just brings to mind a lot of things, even with the younger children, you know, or the younger population, and looking at them and how they're maneuvering around, too. So, yeah. But you brought up some really great points with the fears and not wanting people to know of the
mm-hmm.
of the condition, yeah, yeah.
Mhm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's like a especially as you get older, it's a feeling of almost like it's a weakness, you know, and it like people kind of view it that way, that they're not as strong and independent as they were before, and I think the idea of losing your independence is very frightening, which is why people don't get the tools that they need to do things. My father, he had glaucoma, which never really was noticeable. The last year of his life, the last couple of years of his life, my mom would say, when they were taking me back to the airport, "Don't go with your dad. He'll drive over the in the parking lot, like he'll go over the bump." Know, like,
right.
The glaucoma is very similar to our retinitis pigmentosa in that it's gradual, and it's just the with the pressure of the eye. And I did not know that my father was having such problems because, first of all, I wasn't home, but second of all, my father was very proud, and he didn't tell anybody. Yeah, And so it just came out when we were taking care of him with cancer. You know, I would just thought I would always depend on myself. You know, Dad knows how to drive. And, you know, but later in retrospect, I was thinking he's been going through this stuff, and we just didn't know about it. You know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Yeah. You helped to shine light on so much of a person's actions and reactions to various things that are going on,
mm-hmm.
Especially with the older people, because they do have, you know, that pride factor and,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Like you said, a fear of losing their independence. And so I get, mm-hmm. you know, where people would want to really kind of hide. But then look at you. You were a young lady. You were 28, and you had received the diagnosis, and you chose to risk falling downstairs and getting stitches to keep from people
mm-hmm.
knowing what your situation is. So,
yeah.
you know, it's really fascinating. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So your quest now,
go ahead. I was going to say, just like that little kid said, I'm counting your steps. So that's like a way to cope, to help yourself, you know. People always find different ways in moving forward, and that's what he was doing, or he or she, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So as you go forward in helping
yeah.
people to, be more sensitive to individuals with less than optimal vision,
yeah.
you are helping people to understand the issue from the other side, right? From a person that no longer has the 100% vision.
Yes, I've talked to families. Mm-hmm. I've talked to families.
Go ahead, you talk to
who?
Okay.
Yeah, like people are afraid, like of their teenage daughter or son that's going through that, that's been diagnosed with an eye condition, or I've talked to people in the height of their career. They don't know what to do, and they're at the same place I was in my first book, Mobility Matters, Stepping Out in Faith, and where you have is a crossroads here, what you do, and so I've talked to all kinds of different people about their fears and what to do and how to cope and how to, you know, and how to grieve, because it's a loss, so you have to grieve it. And
great point.
Mm-hmm. And I always say don't just brush it off, because it's just like when you lose a person, you're losing something that you depend on, that that is part of your life, and so you have to take time to let those feelings come out, and then move forward. Yeah. And it's constant with RP, because it's always changing, and you're always losing more vision. So it's like you think that I got this, and then something else changes in your vision. And this other day, I fell down 7 stairs. I was going outside, and I'm like, oh, I didn't think this happened to me anymore.
Wow.
Like, when, you know, but it's okay. You know, if you, you know, you learn how to protect yourself. You know what I mean?
Right.
These kind of things, you take it in stride. I think attitude has a lot to do with how you cope and how you communicate with other both blind and sighted individuals, that you're so confident you can still do this, you know. You're always changing your perception and to adapt. I guess adapt is a important point.
I just want to stop for a minute on the grief aspect
mm-hmm.
of it, because
yeah.
That's something that I have really not taken into account or into consideration as I was talking to my elder family members about, you know, hiding the vision loss that they had. But I never thought to talk to them from a place of allowing them to grieve or encourage them to grieve because they were experiencing that loss. That's really a key point that you brought up there. So I appreciate you for bringing that to light. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the loss is so real, and it impacts your life to such a big degree that sometimes you just need to take that time off and to think about what's my life going to be like? How am I going to? I'm sad.
Yeah.
And then, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Great. Ooh, very, very good. So tell us about the work that you're doing. I believe you're focusing more on the children, and you've done some videos and some other educational.
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us about that.
It was really fun to make. I have two friends that are singers, and I told them what I want people to know about teen use for children and adults, but we decided to focus on children. And so these two singer-songwriters wrote this song for me, and then what we did is we got some children, and I tried very hard to get vision-impaired children from one of our organizations here, but it was too difficult to get everything together, and I tried to get the Lions Club involved in with it. But what we did is my hometown got involved with it, and so we have some children, and they use smaller canes, and we did the song. We walked through a street in our town, in the middle of my town, and it was so marvelous. The people fell away and made it like an arch for people to come, for the vision impaired people to come through. And there's this line in it that says, "Beep beep, I'm coming through." And it's like when your cane is up and down, it means to stop. And it just tells so many little things that are just important. So the kids like that, and I love that song. I was acting it out with them. and
you're so excited, man. It's just coming off. You're just bubbling on the inside. I'm loving it. Can you sing the song for us?
Oh, well, I thought I did post the video, but my voice is really bad. my friend is a choreographer, you know, she does everything, the singer-songwriter. So she, we got a stop sign in there, and what's the last song? Oh, my cane will get me through. And then my hand is up in the air, and triumphantly. And there is also a really wonderful song by a school called Biennes or something, B-I-E-N-N-Z, and it's with vision-impaired children. They wrote this song about what the cane looks like and what it means. It's so wonderful. I can send you that link. It's great. And
can you share that information with the listeners?
Yeah.
The link for the song or the video?
Oh, yes. Oh, let me see where it is. Hang on. I'm trying to get to my computer now.
Okay.
It is B-I-E-N-Z. White is white cane.
B-I-E-N-Z.
B-I-E-N-Z. Let me see if I can get that. P-A...
So Amy just got a brand new computer today. She's been waiting for 3 years to receive, and she told me as we were waiting for the show to start that the keys are so small that she keeps hitting the wrong key on there. So I just want to explain that for anyone that's like, well, I wonder what's taking her so long. Why she gets that inference. You got it?
Okay, I'm getting in there now. And it's...
So her first book, Amy's first book, is called Mobility Matters, Stepping Out in Faith. And she was telling me, and hopefully she'll have a chance to be able to go into a little bit more detail, that it took her over 1 year to make her adjustment where she was working with her mobility instructor and, you know, adjusting to accepting using a cane and being okay that people knew that she was visually impaired. And then her second book is called Cane Confessions. And then her third book, we're going to find out if she's finished it, because it's been a month or more since I've talked to Amy. But as she's trying to get those links together, I thought I would bring those two facts up, that she's already completed two books, and she was finishing up on her third one. And I just really find it so fascinating that she can share so freely with us some of the lessons that she's learned in life through this vision loss, you know, going from being a sighted person to a person who is losing their vision. And so, you know, for me, it's so courageous to spend 20 plus years, I mean, of your young life in your, you know, your 30s, your late 20s and your 30s and 40s overseas, away from your family and away from people that know you. And you're losing your vision, like, steadily, and you're bumming your way around, bumping your way around, you know, like, into things, and like she was telling us, and, you know, falling downstairs and causing bodily injury to yourself. And so for those of you that are listening, and if you know individuals that you either that they're losing their vision, or they actually have lost their vision and or losing their vision, you know, take some of these things into consideration as you interact with folks that Amy is being so generous in sharing with us about, you know, the fear and the grief and the weakness that a person feels in reference to the loss that they're experiencing. So I just wanted to bring all of that into view for us, because we're almost on to the last third of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You found it, Amy?
Okay. One of the my song is The White Cane Song by Melissa and Larry Bean. And that's the one with the children. The White Cane Song. And so it's thewhitecanesong.com. You know.
Okay, .com. Okay, that's easy. Okay.
Yeah. And I'm thinking the BNs. I'm trying to find that one now. BNs. I just love it.
But if we Google B-I-E-N-Z, you said, right? Well, if we Google that, we should probably find it, don't you think?
Yeah. I do think so. And it's like, okay, it should be something like White Cane Day or my cane or something. It's like it usually comes up second in the search.
Okay. We'll look for it then.
Okay. Yeah.
So we're down to about 30 minutes left in the show, and I want to remind the callers that this is Life, Love, and Wellness with Sandy Rogers Show. You have the honor of talking with Amy, if you would like, by calling us at 516-531-9819. Push the number 1 on your dial. That will alert us that you want to speak live on air with us. You can ask Amy a question. You can pat her on the back, compliment her on the work that she's doing, or whatever way you would like to contribute to the conversation. But you are welcome to join in the discussion with Amy as we move along on this radio program. And so, Amy, let's see, there was a tell us about your second book. Well, tell us about the books, because I just gave the titles just now, The Mobility Matters, Stepping Out in Faith, mm-hmm. and Cain yes. Confessions. So yes. Tell us about mm-hmm. those books, please, ma'am. Uh-huh.
Okay. Those two books, the first one deals with coming to terms with vision loss in a work setting with mobility, and it really it takes you through the journey of that. And it's a journey that started 20 years earlier, but it takes you to that point where you have to make a life-changing decision. So, and that was my first two new jobs at the same time, and teaching language and finding out my vision was not up to what it should be, and my hearing was also I had to get some hearing aids. So that's the first book. And it actually, my mobility training is like become, if you're interested in the training, it's interesting the way it's portrayed. And so it's a little bit different than some other books. And it's also a faith book, because I believed that when I was stepping out with my cane, it was like my rod and my staff, they comfort you, that in the Bible. And so I started thinking of it like that God was always with me when I had to cross the road blindfolded, like a busy street. And so I really did focus on all of my training, my big training. And so people have a better idea of what to expect with the training. And the second book, Cain Confessions, is about... Well, it starts out the adapting of all of these different in these different countries, how I adapted, and the lessons that I learned. There's always kind of like a little lesson that I gained from that, and it starts out like in different countries, and then it goes into what have I learned since I've gotten my cane. And, all of these things are struggles that we have, and that we have to figure out what we're going to do with these struggles, how we're going to get through them. Because you have a cane doesn't mean everything's going to be perfect. It means that you have a tool that will help you move forward, but it doesn't mean that everything's going to be perfect. So you still have challenges and struggles that you have to get through. And so I share some of my experiences and the lessons that I learned, even with my cane. Being honest with people about what I can and can't see. And there's a lot of humor in this book, and all the stories are true. And so how I still had trouble communicating. I still had trouble sharing these things because I felt, it's so awkward. And the one time I pretended I liked to sit on the carpet because I didn't want to tell them I couldn't see the furniture. What makes it interesting is that it's something that we kind of all think about but don't act on sometimes. So it's very relatable.
Okay.
And I'm working on the third one now. It's called Second Sight, More Life Lessons in Mobility. And this is from a more so the other ones are from I'm going to get through this, an optimistic viewpoint. This one is through having gone through a lot of these challenges. Now, where am I at in my vision loss, and what am I overcoming? There's a story where I go to the gym, and I'm kind of late, so I forgot my cane, and there's a mirror. There's these floor-length mirrors in there, and so I bump into the mirror, and I said, excuse me. And then I realized that it's me that I'm talking to. But the thing that strikes me later is that looking at myself and looking back and how we see things differently and how we respond to them when we look back at ourselves and how we and how we what do we do when we're in a certain situation. And so that is certainly the signature story of that book. But then I went on to take swimming lessons or, you know, some kind of a thing. What is that when you're doing, not aerobics, but it's another form of exercise that's real popular?
Yoga.
Not yoga.
You said not yoga?
No, but it's another, like, real active one. And anyway, I was doing that in the water.
Pilates? so, Zumba?
Gosh, I can't think of it now. And
don't worry
yeah,
about it.
But it's, yeah, it's really active. And I was going one way, the other person was going the other way. And, it's really, really funny. But so these stories are from more of a, I'm more confident, but I still have things that happen every day. So they're also very humorous.
Okay.
And psychological, like they deal with the psychology, the thought process, And I'm also writing a book about my father and his journey and how he distinguished himself. So I'm excited about that. And then I have another travel book in Ecuador I want to bring out. And I have a devotional book called, Tea Parties and Water Parks. And it's about the relationship with my nieces and great nieces, and the lessons that we share together, and just different life events. It's actually devotional. So I have four different things I'm working on right now.
I see. That's awesome. Yeah. So you're keeping busy and active in life, and that's actually perfect for all of us. At any stage in life is not to let our minds just kind of go to mush, by not using them. And so I did want to advise the audience that I was able to pull that information up on the White Kang phone. But I wanted to ask you, Amy, is it, so they have one that says the White Kang Day 2015 blends,
yes.
BLENNZ.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
It's BLENNZ Music School.
Yes,
so you can find that. It's on YouTube, it says. And
yes.
Then there's
mm-hmm.
another one called The White Kang Song by Melissa and Larry Bean, is it?
Yes.
Is that one
of
yours too? Or?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
mm-hmm.
if you just put in White Kang song in your Google search, it will come up for you. So,
yes.
But
mm-hmm.
it's blends, BLENNZ.
NZ, that's correct.
Great,
mm-hmm.
great.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, okay. So how can people get in contact with you? You know, like if they want for you to come and speak to them, do you do that? Where are you located?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a Facebook
yeah.
page
mm-hmm.
or, you know, so tell us how we get in contact with you.
Okay. I have a brand new website. I've revamped it. It's amybobaird.com, all one word, AMYB as in boy, OV as in Victor, AIRD.com. And it's a beautiful website. It's got my books are all available on there in large print, regular print, and they're also available at Amazon and in Audible and large print and regular print and ebook. Plus, I think they're audible.com, amazon.com, and iTunes. So if they want to listen to the audio version, if they want a signed copy, they can get it from my site. I also have an ebook I have another book written. It's called Seeking Solace, Finding Joy After Loss. And that's a devotional book. That's available in ebook and large print, regular print on my website. I have a little store. I have a Facebook page, Amy Bovaird Author. People can reach me there. And so if they're looking for a speaker, they can go to my website at amybovaird.com and they can in like the contact they can state that that's what they're interested in.
Okay.
I'm also on Twitter and on LinkedIn. So they just look up my name and I'll be right there. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let me spell the last name again for you guys. It's B like in boy, O, B like in Victor, A, I, R like in Robert, D like in David. And so she's on everything, and that's so cool. She's on Audible, e-books, large print, regular print, and, you know, you can't go wrong on Facebook, LinkedIn, and all the different ways to get in contact with her. You're doing some really fabulous work, and this is your life's work now, correct?
It is.
This is what
you do.
Yeah, cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So did your dad spark this light in you to expand the work that you were doing? Because you were already writing right when you came back and when your dad got sick in 2006.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so such a big step to become like a professional writer. And so I think it takes a lot of discipline. That's the word I was looking for earlier, discipline. So I took like different writing courses and different things to become as a mindset that this is going to be my profession. And it was really, you know, you don't know the book that you're going to write, because I was going to write about losing my vision first. And then my mobility was such a huge, had left such a huge impact on me. That's the book that wrote itself. That's the book that came out, not the one So, yeah. Uh-huh. And
cool.
I think little by little,
cool.
I just that's it. That was my focus. And, yeah.
Hmm. Interesting. So we have a caller, 940-535. You want to give us your name and your comment or question or contribution to the discussion, please?
I sure do. My name is Eve. Wow. And you're more than you. And what that means is that what you're doing for yourself, your family, and everybody else, you're doing for all of us with injuries. I just learned myself that I was permanently disabled, and
mm-hmm.
I'm in fitness. And, you know, when I tell everybody that, they don't believe me. That's because the way I move. But I do
mm-hmm.
what the doctor told me to do. And, everything he told me to do, but he told me to keep exercising. And so
mm-hmm.
I teach the class. I teach fitness. But what you're saying, and about to grieve, I live happy, so I know nothing about grieving. It took me 15 minutes when I found out to just think about it. And after I thought about it, and it was me, and what it was is when she gave me my tag for my car, she said, "Is it you?" But everybody does that. They don't believe it. But that's what came out on the x-rays, and that's what the doctor said, and I was feeling uncomfortable, but what it is, I always bounce back, and I've been
mm-hmm.
feeling uncomfortable for years, but I always bounce back. But
mm-hmm.
what you said and what you're doing, you're not only doing it for what you've learned about yourself, your family, and others, you're doing it for me and everybody else. So I call to say
we're all in that together.
Oh, I so love you. Everything you're saying, I don't do anger. I don't do anything against the nature of happiness.
mm-hmm.
So then you mm-hmm. agree. Oh, my goodness, what is that? So
oh, wow. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's lovely to hear from you. Yeah. So encouraging.
Oh, my goodness. How world-filled you are with delicious goodness of, wow, growth for the World Wide Web and Me Too and all of us. So with what you just said, you got me stuck on goodness always, forever, forever and always. You got me. I'm zoning on in on you. And I said, I got to get in here. I said, watch this. I wouldn't be right if I didn't do it.
Yeah.
You help me. Yeah. You help me. And a person that never, I don't even do sorrow. I just understand it. But it's given to me. Like you went back and the word is given to me from the creator that's given to us all.
Yeah.
Everything is for a reason. Everything is for a test and a trial and a time. This is my time. And then, watch this. Then I heard and found you. Wow.
Thank you.
I'm living extra happy now, and I want to say this: a lot of blessings to you and everybody you know, and everybody that you've given this wisdom and knowledge and understanding to, and to me and my soul and my injury, and my life now is different. But my life is so fulfilled because nobody believes I'm disabled. So the thing is this, I know I am because the x-ray said it, but how I live total, like I hear you doing. And I didn't know if there was anybody else to smile all the time with everything that's happening. I didn't know there was anybody else to move it with the things that is happening to our body until I just met you. Wow.
So this is what I got to say. Everything you
said,
I'm drinking it. Everything that I said, I love it. And I know it's almost over. And wait a minute, it's never over for me from now on and all the way until my time is appointed.
Watch this. I'm going to grow, and grab on to all the goodness you said and all the goodness of the world. A lot of love and peace. And thank you forever.
Oh, thank you.
Hey, you, a lot of love.
All right, we got one more call.
Okay.
We got another caller, Amy, 678-468. You want to give us your name and your comment, please? Hello? Caller 678, area code 468. Okay, well, we're going to move right along. And so, Amy, we have about 10 minutes left on the show. Are there thoughts or actions that you would like to leave with the listening audience so that they have an opportunity to interact differently with the people that they know or are associated with that are visually impaired?
Well, I believe there are three things that encourage us, and that is, one, God is with us wherever we go, and so that is our protection. And I feel like God is taking care of me. The second thing is that we have tools, that we are given tools, and if we learn how to use those tools, we can move forward positively. And the third thing is attitude. Attitude makes the biggest difference in the way, in your outlook. It's like a massive difference in your outlook, the way that you see things. So when you focus on positive and how to to problem solve and how to get through these, then that will enable you to move forward. And the other thing is having a sense of humor and being able to laugh at yourself is very important because there's going to be a lot of things that happen.
That
you just can't take seriously. You just really have to just roll with the punches.
Exactly. Well, let's see. Our caller came back, 678-468. You want to give us your name,
good
please,
evening.
And your comment?
Good evening.
Hello.
Good evening, Sandy. I love you.
Hey, I love you, Diane.
Hey, y'all. Hey, Amy. I love you.
Hi.
Thank you so much. You know, listening to you, it is really scary when you go and sit in your doctor's office and they tell you something like, whatever the situation is, that kind of, takes you for a loop. And the most important thing, and you got it, is your attitude and how you're going to approach it, how you're going to deal with it, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's 80% of the battle.
Yes.
So, mm-hmm. you know, you choose to be, because I've had some terrifying, I've had a terrifying, you know, the doctor tell me something. I'm like, hell no. I said, I'm not dealing with that. I don't have any time mm-hmm. for that. No, I have, it's too many other things that I need to do. Mm-hmm. And so it's your approach. And I just love your attitude. And I mean, you didn't let anything stop you. You didn't let anything, and it's just so, and you're motivational. You have mm-hmm. encouraged me, and I just love your attitude and your approach. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
You know,
you have you have us goodly standing with greatness. Thank you.
So you're impacting people, Amy, even, you know, like in the things that they're going through in life. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily vision loss, but just the actual process of life and living. And so your words are encouraging to people, and that's what Diane and Eve are saying to you. You know, mm-hmm. your upbeat attitude, you know. I think you're a hoot myself.
Yeah. I think every day there's something to learn. Every day there's something to, you know, and.
Indeed.
And to share.
Well, you know, you're such a young spirit, you know. I can't believe. Because you said that you were 48, I think, when you came back. So that's going to at least put you into the 50s
years,
somewhere.
So I'm now 58. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And you know, your spirit is that of a youthful person. So just keep that. Hang on to that and continue to live in that way because you're a inspiring to us older people, you know, because you're bringing so much life to the subject. And, you know, sometimes as you get older, your vision does have a tendency to weaken some for a number of reasons, you know, not taking care of yourself and doing too much of this and too much of that that you shouldn't be doing and not doing enough of this and that that you should be doing. And so these are all things for us to take into consideration as we move about and mature in this lifetime. You know, perhaps we will change some of our habits as, you know, as we go mm-hmm. along. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I really enjoyed your presentation and all the beautiful wisdom that you had to share with us.
Oh, thank you. It's been great. I love the music. I love the people. I love you. It's so wonderful to have this opportunity to speak and to share my journey, really.
Good. We've got one more caller, so before you give us the closing thoughts, we've got caller 678-592. You want to give us your name and your comment or concern, please?
Well, you know, I'm just really pleased with Amy because one of the things that I get from that, and whether that's something that comes up that's acute that you're dealing with or something that's chronic you're dealing with, it's giving you an opportunity to even bring out some other gifts that you may not even been aware that you were good at doing.
Absolutely. Yep.
And, mm-hmm. and that is so cool. To be able to do that, and it goes back to, you know, once you get over what the situation is, and you say, well, okay, now that this is showing up, how do I work with that?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And
yeah.
Sometimes for me, that's being quiet to even hear.
it. And then being able to, you know, help other people, Amy, that's all good. You will have so many more blessings, my love. So keep up the good work.
Thank you. Yes. You too.
You're magical. Your words are so inspiring. It's beautiful. It's tremendous. And so we've got about 2 minutes left. You have some words of wisdom, some closing thoughts for us.
I think just make yourself the best self you can be, and you know just really think of what you want to do with your life, because you, every single day, you have that opportunity to make a difference. And when you focus on other people as well, then it takes your mind away from you, and you're helping, you're encouraging someone else. So I think you have to put those two things together. You have to move forward, and I think when we focus on others, then we realize that it's not all about us, you know. It's not all about our challenges or our struggles. It's about being with others and interacting and walking hand in hand.
The world is bigger than us, right?
Right.
That's so perfect. Yeah.
Yeah.
So absolutely perfect. And so once again, before we close out, you can continue communication with Amy at Amy Bovard, is A-M-Y, almost messed that up, B like in boy, O, V like in Victor, A, Apple, IRD.com. Her books are available through audible.com, ebooks, Amazon, large print, regular print. She's on Facebook on Amy Bovard Author. And LinkedIn and Instagram, I think you said, right, Amy?
Yeah, I'm on
You're
Instagram.
You're on all of those
mediums? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Twitter, yeah.
And LinkedIn.
Right. Yeah. And she's got books, Mobility Matters, Stepping Out in Space, Cain Confessions, the book that she did about her father, and her trips, her experiences in Ecuador, for the nieces and great nieces, her inspirational work. So support her, you guys. And Amy, we just love you, love you, love you. And we pray the best for you. And let us know what we can do to support you. And thank you once again for being our guest tonight.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I appreciate it. Oh, it's been wonderful.
You're so beautiful. Bye. Thank you. Good night, everybody. See you next Tuesday.
Thank you. Good night.